So we're on Daf Chaf Aleph Amid Beis, and we're getting close to the next Mishnah. Not sure if we'll get to it today. We'll see. Now on the bottom of Daf Chaf Aleph Amid Aleph, thank you so much. We have, thank you. We have a drasha about Amnon. So let's just go over what we know about Amnon and Tamar. And if you're looking inside, you'll see this approximately 10 lines up from the bottom of the page. Maybe a little bit more than 10. The first word in the line is Yoshvin. So if everybody has the place, let's review Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav. And we're talking about Tamar. Now Tamar, as we'll soon see, would be permitted to marry Amnon. And that's very strange, because they share the same father. Now Amnon's father was David, and Tamar's father was David. Each had a different mother. The mother of Amnon was Ahinoam, if you recall. And the mother of Tamar was Macha. So on the maternal side, they were not related to each other. But on the paternal side, they shared the same father, which means they were brother and sister. So Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav wants to understand, why is it that Tamar turns to Amnon and she says to him that you could marry me? You know, if you would go to David, he would be very happy to officiate at our wedding, when it's a sister and brother relationship. So the answer is Tamar Bas, she's the daughter of Macha, who is a Yefas Toar Haisa. Now we're going according to the Rishonim, not all Rishonim agreed to this position, that Bia Rishona Bigiyusa, that means that the Eishes Yefas Toar is allowed to have Bia Rishona with this Jewish soldier even before Gerus. So that according to Halacha, obviously she's a Goya. If she's a Goya, then we have a principle called Ger Katan Shenolan Tovi, meaning that there's no relatives of two Jews, even though they're biologically related, they have the same father, if one of them is a Ger, or both of them are Gerim. So in this case, Tamar's status is that of a Gioris, because her mother was not Jewish at the time that she was born. So now Tamar is not really related to Amnon on a legal, halachic level. Again, as far as biological relatives are concerned, obviously they're sister and brother on the paternal side, but halachically they're not related. Is that clear? Did I make sense? Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Shenemar. Now, how does Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav know that, according to Halacha, Tamar and Amnon are not related? And the answer is because the pasuk says that Ve'ata, this is Tamar speaking to Amnon, and he's about to have a relationship with her, he's about to rape her. And she says to Ve'ata, now, Daberna al ha-melech, or el ha-melech, ki lo yimna eini mimcha, mimecha. In other words, he would not inhibit, he would not prevent us from getting married. So Tamar is saying to Amnon, if you love me and you want to have this passionate relationship with me, let's just get married together. And David would certainly allow that marriage. So rather than do this terrible act, Ve'isa, why not do it beheter, marry me beheter. Isak edaitoch mas nisuin havi. If you would assume that Tamar was the daughter of a Jewish woman, meaning that Macha, her mother, had already converted before she was conceived, she meaning Tamar was conceived, then achte, then by definition, she is the sister of Amnon, because they both share the same father. Mihavi Sharisle, how would David HaMelech allow such a marriage to take place? El Shema Mino, we have no other option but to conclude that Bas, that she, Tamar, is the daughter of a Yifas Torah Hoysa. In other words, that she was born to her mother from David before her mother underwent Gerus. And therefore, since she was born when her mother was a Goya, she's not considered the daughter of David. Alpi Halacha, again, biologically, she's certainly the daughter of David, but as far as Halacha is concerned, she's not considered the daughter of David. And therefore, she's not prohibited from marrying Amnon. And all this fits into what we saw in the earlier sugya of yesterday, that David HaMelech, shall we say, in every single war, took a Yifas Toar. One of them was Macha, and Tamar was born to Macha. But at that time, it was Bia Rishona, so she was still a Goyita. Everybody have that? Okay. Now, the Gemara, once starting with Rav Yehuda's presentation about the episode of Amnon raping his sister Tamar. When I say his sister, I mean his biological sister. So the Gemara continues with Rav Yehuda Amarav's statement about an individual by the name of Yonadav. And the Pasuk says, Uli Amnon Rea Ushmo Yonadav ben Shima Achi David. So the Amnon has a friend whose name is Yonadav, and he's called an Ish Chacham. Now, when you see the phrase Ish Chacham describing a person, you assume that he's a scholar, he's a moral person, upstanding, he has great piety. Amram Yudam Arav Ish Chacham L'Risha, that this pasuk is an exceptional pasuk. It's not classic Ish Chacham, but rather in this context, it means he was a Chacham for evil. He used his chokhmah, he misused his chokhmah to give what we call an etzas chet, a counsel for sin. And it's Yonadav who's going to tell Amnon exactly how he can orchestrate this relationship that he wants to have with Tamar. Vayomer. And Yonadav turns to Amnon, and he sees that Amnon has a sour face. He says, Madu ata kacha dal? Why do you have this drawn face, like a withered up face? Ben Melech, you're the son of the king. So Amnon responds, and he says that he loves Tamar. Now it's interesting, in the pasuk itself, and this is where I got a little bit confused yesterday, we'll see if we'll do better today, Mitzvah Hashem, he describes Tamar as Achos Avshalom. Now if we go back to the pasuk about the six wives of David, so let's see, just one second, oh, Hashlishi Avshalom ben Macha. That means that Avshalom is a full sister, I mean full brother, to Tamar, because Avshalom and Tamar had the same parents, David and Macha. So that in this pasuk, when Amnon responds to the question of Aminadav, of Yonadav, excuse me, and he tells about his love for Tamar, he describes Tamar as, quote, Achos Avshalom Achi, meaning I and Avshalom share the same father, so we're brothers. And Avshalom is a brother to Tamar, a full brother, because they share both the mother, the same mother, and the same father. So both Tamar and Avshalom are B'nai Macha. And of course, they're both children of David. It could be, I didn't get a chance to research this, that maybe the reason why Amnon is describing Tamar as the sister of Avshalom, when really she's his own sister, is because he doesn't want to admit that his relationship with her is illegitimate. And in fact, it's not illegitimate, because as we said before, Tamar was born to Macha when Macha was not Jewish. Avshalom, on the other hand, was born to David HaMelech. So for sure, Avshalom and Tamar are sister and brother. So Vayomalo Yonadav. Yonadav gives him the following Eitzah. Shchav al mishkavcha, make believe you're very sick, and lie in bed, you know, feign illness. Vehischal. Hischal is miloshen chole. It's a reflexive verb of the noun chole. That is, make yourself into a chole. We used to do this in order to get out of school. I don't know if you can just, you know, admit that you did the same. I don't know, but anyway, I'll admit about myself. You know, it was always good. Yeah. We used to wait by the radio. I remember, you know, this is really dating myself, when on snowy days, to see if our school was listed as one of the schools that was closed that day. And you can imagine the great joy when we heard our school's name mentioned.
For the teachers.
Yeah, for the teachers as well. Now, the rest of this pasuk, which is not quoted here in our text, is the following. Uba avicha lirosecha, which means that your father David is going to come to visit you. And the pasuk continues and says, and again, it's not here in the text, I'll read it to you. It says, V'yamarta elov, you're going to turn to David, and you're going to ask David for the following request. Tavona tamar achosi v'tavreni lechem. Now the word tavreni in very fancy biblical Hebrew means ta'achileni. So he's basically asking David to summon Tamar to bake him bread, because he's too ill to bake it himself. V'asasoli enai es habiria. Again, birya comes from the same shorish as tavreni, and it means the machal, the food. L'man asher erev yachalti miyada. In other words, I'm going to watch Tamar as she bakes the bread, because she's my sister, and you know, it's a very nice relationship that we have. And this is going to give me an appetite to eat. You know, chola usually doesn't have an appetite, but if he sees that the bed, you know, if he's there and he smells the bread and he watches as the bread is being baked, then I will be able to eat from her hands. Those, that will give me back my appetite. And this is exactly what Amnon did. He implemented the recommendation of Yonadav. And the pasuk says, Vayishkav Amnon Vayischol. Vayischol means he feigned illness. Vayavo HaMelech Lir'oso. And now David comes to visit him. Vayomer Amnon El HaMelech. Tavona tamar achosi, utolavev li'enai shtei levavos. Now, my favorite food, if I was feeling well, is to take levavos, would mean latkes. Yeah, we call latkes. You know, to take some sort of a flat, you know, flour and water a piece and put it into hot water. The evra, and then I'll be able to eat it miyada from her hand. So David is very naive in this case. Vayishlach David as el Tamar abaisa lemar lechina beis Amnon achich, go to the house of Amnon your brother. Vasilo abirya, make him this food. Vatelech Tamar beis Amnon achia, v'hu shochev. Vatikach es abotzek, she takes the flour. And vatolash vatolabev li'eno vatavashal es halavavos. Then the pasuk says, this already you have in your printed Gemara, vatikach hamasres, masres is the flat pan, frying pan, Vatitzok lefanav. And she pours from this frying pan into a bowl these levivot, these latkes. Omar Rav Yehuda Marav, she'osa solo mine tigun, that she fried this batzek, this dough, in a frying pan, together with oil. So we want to address for a minute two questions here, and then we'll go on in the story. Question number one is, didn't David feel that there was something fishy going on over here? How is it that David was the one who, in a sense, naively set up this whole situation where Amnon is about to have this forced relationship with his sister Tamar? Second question is, why do we give a hoot, if you pardon the expression, about the fact that she poured this dough into a frying pan with oil and she fried the latkes? All of this seems to be so irrelevant. We're going to study now the insights of the Ben Yehoyada on Agadata. He's one of the top commentaries. He's also known as the Ben Ish Chai from Baghdad. And he says the following. Bar Rav Yehuda liyashev kushas ha'olam. When Rav Yehuda describes this fried latke that she made for him, for Amnon, Rav Yehuda's intention was to answer the following question. Ha'olam makshim, the Velt asks the following question. Eich David lo hirgish b'chachmaso, David was such a chacham, how did he not feel shemasha b'keish shetavo etzlo v'tasa tafshel afanov? It's a very odd request that she should come and make the food in front of his eyes. V'lo yada, he didn't understand with his chachma shemavakishu lishkov ima, that he wants to have a relationship with her. Shem lo kein, lama lo tavashel b'mokom acher v'tavi elof. Why shouldn't she make the food wherever she is and just deliver the food to his house, to his room? Alkein heishiv Rav Yehuda, shahoya zev mine tigun. How is tigun, something that's fried, different than something that's cooked? He says the following. When you cook something, then you put a lid on top of the pot. And that lid will retain the heat for a long period of time. So what you can do is you can make hot soup or whatever you're making that's hot. You can bring it from one place to the other despite the time that it takes to transport it. Nevertheless, it still remains hot because it's covered with a pot lid. El lefisha lo hayez et bishel el etigun, but because Amnon was interested in fried foods, which is nasa b'machvas gluya, which you make in a frying pan that's open, below kisui, ein chomo shomur, it doesn't retain its heat, v'ukarov liskarer, it cools off very quickly, v'tigun, she'eno cham, if the tigun is kar, it's cold, is eno tov liochlo. So that if Amnon wanted to eat fried foods, it would make sense. Lakach shehutzuch halavo etzlo laso satikun lefanav, because again, tigun is only tasty if it's right out of the frying pan. Because otherwise, since it's not covered and nothing is there to retain the heat, it's going to cool off, and cooled fried food is not very tasty. Ubazeh. And as a result of this Eitza, which was given by Yonadav to Amnon, lo na'oda aramoso, it wasn't clear to anybody, not even to David HaMelech, what he was trying to do. So in other words, within the context of a chole who needs to eat, in this case, fried foods, and it should be hot, it made sense, everything that Amnon was requesting from David, that Tamar should come and in his house make the fried latkes, all this was sensible. And this is the way he was able to cover up his true intention. Again, this is all assuming that David felt that Amnon was ill. Because Tamar was the sister of Amnon, and it made sense that if they had some sort of a sister-brother relationship, that she would want to help him get better. You know, it all depends on your relationship with your sister. You know, some people have a foreign relationship. You know, they're not close. But if you have a close relationship, sister and brother. And what happens after she prepares the food? Amnon refuses to eat the food, and he sends everybody away. He kicks everybody out. And then he grabs onto her, and against her will, he has this relationship with her. And the Tanakh describes his feeling on the very next morning, so to speak. Here's a man who's in love passionately with a woman, and he consummates that marriage. And what do you expect should be his feeling the next morning? You would think that he would have intensified his love. But instead, the Tanakh records, "Vayisna'er Amnon sinah gedola mi'od." Instead, Amnon finds this woman absolutely repulsive. The rest of the pasuk is even more profound. It says, more dramatic, I would say, "Ki gedola sina asher sana," his hatred for it even supersedes the "ava asher ava." As if you would compare the level, the decibels of his sina to the decibels of his love, and we know how much he was, you know, completely infatuated with this woman, with Tamar, and yet the sina was even greater. My time is, the Gemara says, why? It doesn't make sense. It's not the natural response of the sequence of events that he should hate her. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak. Okay, now this part of the Gemara, it gets a little bit gory. And basically what happens is... thank you. That at the time of the consummation of this relationship, she, Tamar, takes the law into her own hands. And she does something to permanently injure Amnon in a very sensitive place. Let's put it this way, in a place where he can no longer have children. That's called, in the Gemara's language, all over Shas, krus shavcha. That means somehow a destruction of the testicles in such a way that it could no longer produce zera. And a krus shivcha is actually posel lekahal. He's not allowed to marry anyone. Well, there's one person that he could marry, one category. We'll get to that in just a minute. Now, how did she pull this off? How was she able to injure him during this sexual act? And Rabbi Yitzchak tells us the gory details. Neima nikshirolo. She had pubic hairs, and those hairs got tangled up in his organ. Vasaso krus shivcha, and she was able to cut through with these hairs in such a way that he was permanently irretrievably damaged, injured. So the Gemara thinks that this may have happened as a natural result of the act of intercourse. Why is Amnon angry at Tamar? She's not to blame. So the Gemara immediately asks, "Ihi mai avda? What did she do? If his organ got caught up in her hairs and it strangled his organ, that's not her problem." Ella Ema, the Gemara says you have to change it a little bit. Shekashrolo Nema, that she took one of these hairs and she tied it around his organ. Vasato krus shivcha, and therefore he hated her. Now, there's a very interesting comment here, again in the Ben Yehoyada. He says the following. It was common practice back in the day that a besula would use a certain kind of sam. I don't know if anybody knows what it's called. Like, there's a name for it. I don't know if it's a... Anyway, and... it would be used l'mshach asaros lasosam chados ukoshos. So she would have used, and this is a way of sort of protecting her virginity, she would use some sort of a drug that would have an impact on the saros. And he goes on to say the following, that, just 1 second, where is it? Okay. I'm going to tell it to you about Peh, and then hopefully I'll find it inside. The Gemara tells us that the Benos Tzion, the daughters of Israel, were very beautiful. And they had certain elements of beauty that were unique to the daughters of Israel. One of them is that they didn't have sear. They didn't have what we call pubic hairs. Not sure why I'm not finding it here. Just 1 second. Okay. I don't know why I'm not finding that. Does anybody see that maybe in one of the footnotes here? I know I saw it yesterday.
That they don't have.
Yeah, do you have it in one of your notes there?
Looking for the word. Is it the Gemara that says it? Or?
I'm not sure if it's. I think it's in Gemara.
Right here.
Oh, it's here in this Gemara?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
I didn't realize.
I thought it was in one of the notes he quotes the Gemara.
Darash Rava.
Well, Eini, the Gemara says, Vadarash Rava Maidich Siv. What does the Pasuk mean in Yechezkel Anavi when it praises the Benos Yisrael? And it says, that the daughters of Israel were famous for their beauty. That the daughters of Israel did not have pubic hair, not under their arms and not in the vaginal area. So therefore, how could it be if Tamar is a Jewish girl, then how could it be that she makes Amnon into a Krush Shivcha because of her vaginal hairs? A Jewish woman doesn't have vaginal hairs. Now, I'm not sure exactly what that means, so don't ask me too many questions. But the Gemara answers, Shani Tamar is different. The Bas Yifas Tar Havi. Right? She was born a non-Jewish woman. So her biological system was typical of the nations of the world, not of the Jewish nation. Okay. But now let's get back to the Ben Yehoyada that we started with. He says the following. The Besuos, again, this was, again, if we take the Gemara that we just saw, it was common in the nations of the world. They would use this kind of a psalm, and as a result, the pubic hairs would become Chados v'koshos. They would be coming very prickly, very sharp. And that was a simon that no one should go near them. Amnon, when he slept with her, Hiskim, he decided that he was so eager to have this relationship, Lisbol tzar zeh ulidoker besaros shehen kikotzin. He would suffer this pain for the sake of his lust, of his pleasure. Achi his chakma, but she was very sharp. Vigam koshra saaros bechozek nema benema chenasu kemachat kidei lechazkam sheinokvu besoro v'yasenu krus shivcha. So she knew what was going to happen, and therefore she prepared her body in such a way that the saros would become so tough, bechozek, that it would be like a needle going into his organ, as we said before, and he became a krush shivcha. Now, let me ask you the following question. Based on everything we learned, I'll give you two choices. Did Tamar do this deliberately or not deliberately? What's the impression you get? Deliberately. It sounds like this was all done deliberately. Well, listen to the next paragraph. He says, Tamar Haisat Sadekes. We're going to see later on that she teaches the Midah of Tznius. So she is a paradigm of a very pious woman. V'lohaisa kavanasa linko mimena. She was not deliberately involved in planning revenge. V'adarab, on the contrary. Li'achara maisa, after this episode, hischanana lefanov, she begged him, shelo yishlechena, that he shouldn't send her on her way. Kavanasa hoisa, she kaim ba mitzvahs v'lo siya le'isha. Kidina Nusa. There's a parsha in Kitetze, we spent a lot of time on it actually here in this room when we were learning the third parak of Ksubas, that a man who rapes a woman, a psula, is obligated to marry her. Ahi yada, she knew, shehu lo yirtze l'kayim ba mitzvah zu, kevon shehu ben melech, v'hi gioris. She already anticipated that he would reject all her proposals because he was the prince, he was the king, you know, like next in line to be king, so to speak. And she was a gioris. The eno mimishpachas, mimishpachos hamiyuchasos shebi Yisrael. Lachen hischakma v'asasa oso krushivcha. This was all part of her tzidkus, that she would deliberately make him into Kroshivcha. As a result, lo yehi mutar od bivas Yisrael, he's not allowed to marry any other Jewish woman. The only woman he's allowed to marry is a Gioris. A Kroshivcha is allowed to marry to a Gioris. And that's a Mishnah Masech Yevamos. So that her brilliant move was to force him, so to speak, to marry her. And why would he have to marry her? Because in the midst of a low Elisha. And if he doesn't marry her, he has no other option. Now again, I don't know personally if I would give her a great grade for this. I mean, it's quite clever on her part. But, you know, to force a person to marry you by making you into a, by making that person into a Krush Shivcha, you know, I don't know, that sounds a little bit tricky to me, to say the least. Again, she could always claim, well, this is the mitzvah of Elosi Elisha, and if he refuses to fulfill his mitzvah, then he deserves to be a Kroshivcha. I don't know. Very difficult. Okay.
You said that a Kroshivcha can only marry a certain status of a woman.
A Gioris. Only a Gioris. And Tamar was a Gioris.
Sure.
So the only possible woman he could marry would be her.
So in this case, she was enticing. She was enticing.
But he, again, he refused to marry her because he had such a hatred for her, because what she did would make him injured for life. He would never be allowed to marry any Jewish woman other than a Gioris. Now let's go on in the episode. What happens after Amnon sleeps with Tamar? Vatikach Tamar Efer al Rosha. Basically, Efer al Rosha means a kind of avelus, a kind of mourning, when you put ashes on your head. Uktones hapasim sherolel kra'a. She wore a beautiful garment and she ripped it, she rendered it. That's another simon of avelus. The end of the pasuk, I'll read to you, it's not in the text. It says, Vatasem yada arosha. She puts her hands on her head. Vatelech haloch vizaka. She does a public demonstration of her mourning, of her anguish. Tana Mishmei de Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha. Why was Tamar doing this? This public expression of avelus. She wants to teach other girls. Geder gadol gadra Tamar v'yoso shah. with her wailing and crying in Za'aka, she was teaching the girls of Israel how to make gedarim. Gedarim meaning fences or separate themselves. She was willing to humiliate herself publicly because she wanted to teach the girls how they have to be tznuos, that they have to really be very modest. Because if there's no absolute modesty, then what you could end up with is the same situation that she found herself in. Now again, I don't know enough to tell you that Amnon fell in love with Tamar because she was less than a complete tznua. I don't know. But maybe even in the most extreme kind of tznius, there still is a possibility that a man would passionately fall in love with a woman. And now she teaches the women of Israel a kal vachomer, the Amru. What they were meant to respond when they saw her anguish is with a kal vachomer. Livnos malachim kach. If such a kilkel could happen, such a terrible disaster could happen to the daughter of kings, because after all is said and done, she's the daughter of David, at least biologically, is livnos het yotos, alachas kama v'kama. How much more so could a woman who doesn't have that stature possibly fall into a situation where she might be chas v'shalom raped? The imlet snuos kach, she is such a modest woman, Tamar, and yet look what happened, is leprutzos alachas kama v'kama. How much more so could such a terrible thing occur in the case of a woman who's not careful about modesty? Again, the Gemara uses a very harsh term here called a prutzos, which means a loose woman, but I don't think the Gemara means to say a loose woman. A loose woman is not going to be interested in Tamar's kal v'chomer. But prutzos means if she's not careful enough about her modesty. And this was the proof that the Ben Yoyada invoked that Tamar was indeed a tzaddikus. And she was the one who would embarrass herself publicly in order to teach this Geder Gadol. So she didn't want to have revenge. Revenge is a low kind of a thing. What she wanted to do was guarantee that Amnon would fulfill his mitzvah, his obligation, which is v'lo siya l'isha, to marry him. Now at this point, my friends, we're going to take a kind of digression, but it's not really a digression. We're going to learn now the law of Yichud. So by introduction, the law of Yichud means that the Torah prohibits a man from being alone with a woman in a locked room with total privacy if she is an erva to him. For example, let's say it's not a biological sister, but a halachic sister. Now, again, the case of a brother and a sister is a little bit different, which we can get into, and that's a Gemara at the end of Masechta Kiddushin. But what we want to emphasize now is that if the relationship between the man and the woman is that of an erva, then they're not allowed to be secluded in the same place, alone, in a locked room. However, that's on a Doraisa level. On a Darabanan level, even if she's not an Erva, for example, let's say she's a non-Jewish woman, that's not technically an Erva, or let's say she's an unmarried woman and she's Jewish, but let's say she's not a Nida, because again, if she's a Nida, then it becomes complicated. So that's called Pnuya. And the question is, did the Rabbanan extend the Doraisa of Yichud and prohibit a man from being alone in a closed, locked room with a single woman, a single Jewish woman? Amar Rav Yehuda Marav, Ba'osa Shah, in the aftermath of this episode, in which Amnon was alone with Tamar and he raped her, Gazru, the Chachamim made a gzera, they enacted the Iser Yichud. Now we're turning to Chaf Aleph Amin Beis. a man is not allowed to be alone with an erva. Let's take the case of a married woman. Again, the exception is if the husband is somewhere in proximity. But let's say the husband is on a cruise. You know, he's on a long trip, far away from home. For another man to be alone with his wife would be a violation of Yichud D'Oraisa. But now, the Rabbanan want to extend that beyond the case of an Eishes Ish, ala Pnuya, to the case of a non-married woman, a single girl. Now again, if he marries this girl, obviously he's allowed to have relations with her. He gives a ksuba, and that's fine. But if she's a pnuya, and he hasn't married her, he didn't give a kedushin or ksuba, then he's not allowed to have a relationship with her. Okay, now what exactly is the nature of this prohibition that a single man is not allowed to have a relationship with a single woman? Can you give this back later? If you know, because it just distracts me.
Yeah.
Okay, so now, what is the nature of that isa? She's not an erva. So here we have the Yad Ramah, as I call him, the super commentary on Sanhedrin. He says that on a Doraisa level, the only scenario in which a man is not allowed to have a relationship with a single girl, again, this is all on a Torah level, is only if, quote, she's mufkeres liznus. She's a girl who has wanton relations with any man that comes along. This shita of the Yad Ramah is also the opinion of the Ravid at the beginning of Hilchas Ishus, in which he takes objection to the Rambam. The Rambam says that bias pnuya asura min haTorah, that the Torah prohibits a man from having a relationship with a non-married woman. And according to the Rambam, the Torah requires a man to marry a woman and then he can have relations. But if he doesn't have that marriage relationship with her, the Torah prohibits that bia. So it's very interesting because we talk about gzeira d'rabbanan, let's say in this case yichud pnuya, atu, because you might lead to a violation of a Torah law. Well, according to the Ravid and the Yad Ramah, in the worst case scenario, if Chas V'Shalom would have beer with her in that yichud situation where they're alone, he does not violate a doraisa unless she's mufkeres liznus. But if she's not mufkeres liznus, she's not a known, you know, professional kind of woman there, then there's no doraisa. The Rambam, on the other hand, says that bias pnuya is an isa doraisa. So it makes sense that the Rabbanu would institute a gzera of yichud with a pnuya because it might end up with a violation of a doraisa. So here I would say, in our sugya of yichud with a pnuya, the Rambam seems to have the upper hand. Perhaps as we go along in this sugya, we'll be able to come up with some justification for the Iser Yichud with a Pnuya, according to those Rishonim will hold that even the Bia itself is not also Doraisa. The Gemara now asks the following question. The Torah says that Gili Arayas is prohibited. The man is not allowed to have an intercourse with an Erevah. Where does the Torah say that a man is not allowed to be secluded with an erva? Yichud doraisahu? Oh, I read it as a question mark. Yichud doraisahu. And yichud itself is a Torah prohibition. And this is based on Rav Shimon ben Yotzadok. In other words, where in the Torah does the Torah prohibit yichud? Does the Torah anywhere say that a man is not allowed to be in a secluded place with a woman because she's an erva? The Torah says lo segala ervasa, which means a beer relationship. Remez li yichud min haTorah minayim. Now, the impression you get is that the Gemara up front gives up hope. We will not be able to find a source for yichud in the Torah, for the isa yichud in the Torah. What gives me that impression, Rabosai?
Remez.
The word remez means the following. Look through the Torah, you will not find anywhere where the Torah forbids yichud. What you will find is a remez. So many of the Mefarshim say that yichud is some sort of a halacha l'Moshe miSinai. Again, we're talking about yichud min haTorah with an erava. What Rabbi Yochanan, in the name of Rabbi Shimon, wants to accomplish here is, can we find some remez for that Isur that's really just halacha l'Moshe miSinai? It's part of the oral tradition that Moshe received at Har Sinai. Now, what is the significance of finding a remez for halacha l'Moshe miSinai? Do we have to look for a remez for every single halacha l'Moshe miSinai? So let's see first what that remez is, and then maybe, perhaps, we can understand why we need a remez. Because right now I'm in the dark. I don't understand why we need a remez. Now the Gemara, Reb Shimon is going to quote the parsha of Mesis. Mesis means when someone entices someone else to worship an idol. Like, let's say Reuven comes to Shimon and he says, Shimon, this idol is worth it. It's worth it for you to worship this idol. You'll get a lot of good things are going to happen to you. That's called a Mesis. Now, a mesis is not related to the person, or at least doesn't have to be related to the person who was enticed, the Lord, to worship the Avodah Zarah. And yet, the Torah says, Ki yisischa achicha ben imecha. What it means is that there are two brothers that share the same mother, they are maternal brothers, and one entices the other to worship Avodah Zarah. Why would the Torah feel compelled to tell me that the Mesis is the brother of the person who worshipped the idol, and not only that, he's a brother because they share the same mother? The whole thing seems totally out of place. V'chi ben Mesis Uben Av Eino Mesis. If you have two brothers and they share the same mother, then there's a Mesis situation and he's going to be Chayav Misa for being a Mesis. But if there are two brothers who share the same father, then there's no din of Mesis. The Gemara rejects that outright. It cannot be that Mesis means that these brothers share the same mother, but if they share the same father, there's no din of Mesis. Mesis applies even if they're not related at all. Ella, says the Gemara, we have to take this pasuk out of its context. And it's telling us something about an entirely different subject. Lomar lecha, what the Torah wants to, by the by, teach us, is that ben misyached im imo, that a son is allowed to have yichud with his mother, even though, again, if they would have a sexual relationship, that's a very severe erva relationship. So it means that a son is very often in the presence or in a private room with his mother. So that's called matsui. Matsui means it's quite common for a son to be with his mother. He's always there. Now, who else is in the room? His brothers. Who are his brothers? The brothers who share the same mother. So there's a special relationship, in the case of a half-brother, to maternal half-brothers. Why? Because it's natural for the half-brothers to find themselves together with their mother. They have a common mother, and that's where they hang out, and they see each other, and they know each other, they have a close relationship, and one brother says to his other brother, hey, let's go worship this idol. It's worth it. So that the mesis situation, in the case of a half-brother, is more common in a situation of maternal brothers, because they're allowed to be alone with their mother, and that's exactly what they do. So they are all together in their mother's company, and they become very close. And one brother thinks he, you know, he won the jackpot. You know, he worshipped Par and he became a millionaire. So he tells his brother, this is a good way of becoming a millionaire. You know, everybody wants to invest today in real estate, but nobody has the money to invest. So all you have to do is worship this idol, and you'll become wealthy. So he feels he's doing a favor to his brother. That's called the mesis. But the important thing about this remez, and why it is a remez, is because the Torah is telling you that a son is allowed to be alone with his mother, even though she's an erev. Why is the Torah telling me something that I would know? I mean, you look at all the nations of the world, you'll always find in human nature that a son is very close to his mother. The answer is that this is a chiddush. It's really a new idea. It's a halachic legal breakthrough that a son is allowed to be alone with his mother. Why? Because ben misyachinim imo, this is going to be the exception to the rule. The Torah is giving special permission and license for a son to be alone with his mother. But ein acher misyachinim arayo shabbat Torah, the Torah is telling us that with regard to any other erev relationship, a man is not allowed to be alone in a closed room with that erev. So now the Gemara says the following, summarizing what we have here, that there's an Issur Yichud min HaTorah. So the question is, why did the Chazal have to institute an Issur Yichud? That's what it says, Gazra al Yichud, when the Torah itself prohibits Yichud in the light of this remez, this whole drush of Rav Shimma. Ela Emo, but you have to change the words of Rav Yudah Marav. It says Shegazru al HaYichud vi al HaPnuya, which sounds like there were two separate gzeros. There was one gzer of Yichud in the aftermath of this terrible episode with Amnam and Tamar, and number two, there was a gzera that a man is not allowed to have a relationship with a Pnuya, which makes sense if you hold like the Ramah and the Raivin. Says the Gemara, no, you have to change the girsa. Ela Ema, what we should see in the words of Rabbi Yehuda, in the name of Rav, is Gazru al Yichud dipnuya. Not that there were two separate gzeros, one on Yichud and one on Pnuya, one of being alone with a woman and the other in having a relationship, an intimacy with a Pnuya. No. Intimacy with a Pnuya might be prohibited even on a Daraisa level. I don't need a gzera. But Yichud, in the case of a pnuya, is only a gzera derabanan, because on a Torah level, the Torah only prohibited what? Yichud with an erva. Does everybody have that? Now, we'll very quickly see if we can get to the Mishnah, and if I do a quick job here, we'll finish it up tomorrow. The Pasuk in Sefer Melachim talks about Adoniyah ben Chagis, and he decided that since he's the son of David, he is going to be the next king in line. And he declares, Ani Amloch, I will be the king. And he gets together chariots and runners. 50 people are running in front of his chariot. V'Adoniyah ben Chagis misnasei, he pulls himself up. Lemar Ani Amloch, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Marav, Melamed, Shabikesh Laholmo. He took upon himself, on his head, the crown of the king of David, and he tried to fit it on his head. Apparently, the crown of David was custom made, and it would fit perfectly on David's head. Veloho Maso. It did not fit on the head of Adoniyah. And that was meant to be a proof that he was not meant to be the next in line. Vayaslo rechev uparashiva chamishim ishrotzim lefonav myrabusa. What's the big deal? He's the son of the king. For sure, he could have 50 people running in front of him. Amrav Yehuda Marav kulam netule tchol v'chakuke kapos raglayim hayu. And he says that these were such fast runners. Yeah, if somebody could please close the door. And these were such fast runners. Why? Because they had removed the heel of their feet. And that was a surgical operation. That's called chakuke kapos raglayim hayu. And they removed a part of their body called the tchol. And the tchol slows you down. I forget what tchol is called in English.
A spleen.
Excellent. A spleen. And if you remove the spleen, you're a fast runner. So the chiddush here is that he got 50 people who volunteered to do these surgical operations so they could be the fastest runners in the world and run in front of Adonijah. So Mirtz Hashem, tomorrow we'll start the next mishnah. Everyone should have a great day. If anyone's interested in Iyun, Bli Neder, if my voice holds out, at 10:35 we'll have an Iyun.